This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 327, where today CJ and I are going to talk about some of the announcements from Microsoft Ignite 2019 in Orlando, Florida.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
Hey CJ, how's it going?
Very well, very well.
I'm doing good. I am all ready for a week of Ignite that is ready to be tired all day, all week long. How about yourself?
Yeah, this is one of those episodes where we're not entirely sure which tense to use.
Yeah.
Because we are recording this before Ignite has started, but we're talking about things that we should only know once Ignite has started.
Yeah. So for a little bit of a behind the scenes for some of our listeners, the way that this works is that with some members of the media, companies will, they have a big event like this, they will share some news to get some like talking points and to kind of be, so people can be ready with some information that they want to share prior to the announcements actually come out. And the rule is that when you are trusted, because in the past you have sat on the information they've shared with you until a certain time. And so it's called when an embargo lifts. So we are following the rules and we are going to make sure that this, we're sitting on this. So when we are recording this a little bit before some of the announcements come out, but we do want to cover a couple things, some stuff that is being announced at Ignite, some things you can go take a look at that you may find interesting at the conference that you can go take a look at. So I guess before we get started here, CJ, how have you been leading up to Ignite? You coming in with your eyebrows on fire?
Oh my God. And the rest. Yeah. Everything's on fire. No, it's just been a really busy week. The run up to the show, I'm dealing with everything from Lifetiles as an exhibitor at the show again this year. And so there's just a lot that entails. Mm. And fortunately, our marketing team have been absolutely furiously busy getting ready for it. But I mean, it includes everything from demos and new product stuff. And, you know, I'm attending and helping out there and got meetings planned there and all that sort of stuff. And it's just a lot to get done before I head off. So yeah, it's been a bit of a flurry and my head's kind of spinning in all honesty. But I'm looking forward to, you know, once you board the plane, there's not much more you can do about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like one of those, okay, it's happening. There's not much more I can do.
Yeah.
So no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm leaving here on Saturday and I'm actually flying to Portland on Saturday night and overnighting in Portland to fly direct because Microsoft has bought every single seat on every single aircraft that goes direct from Seattle to Orlando. My only option was to red eye from Seattle direct to Orlando. And I'm too old for that, man. I can't get one of those.
I don't do that myself anymore either.
I want a 5.5-hour flight to arrive at like 6 o'clock in the morning. Like to me, that's suicide to me, right?
Yeah.
Like I would feel like death. So yeah, so I decided to fly to Portland the night before, have a nice rest in the hotel, and then fly to Orlando direct on Sunday morning.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm with you on that. The red eye from, I get the red eye like going over to Europe, from the United States over to Europe or some other locations and stuff.
Sure.
But yeah. The red eye from
sleep.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You can sleep a little bit too. You don't even get like a good rest on it because, at least for me, coming from East Coast, I'm usually going to leave out of Atlanta going to, say, Amsterdam. That's an 8-hour flight. It's going to be about an hour, hour and a half before they get the food served on the plane. And even if you decide to skip the food, it's still, there's a lot of commotion going on when they're serving it.
There's noise.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
So you can't get to sleep, you know, right away. So there's an hour and a half knocked out. So there's now it's down to a 6.5-hour time on the plane. And then they're going to, you know, crack everything on about an hour before the plane lands to do breakfast, do the same deal. And you can't avoid that. So now you're down to a 5.5 hours. And that's not a whole lot of time to be able to sleep. And I get that, you know, when you're doing West Coast, East Coast, the United States, you don't have the whole meal thing mostly. I mean, you're first class, you do, but you generally don't have the whole meal thing. And the same thing goes with an international flight. But you're, like you said, it's a 5-hour flight, but yeah, you're only going to get about 3 hours of potential sleep on there. And it's just, it's a waste.
I can't survive on 2 or 3 hours sleep. Not a chance.
No, and especially leading into a show like this.
No, I'm going to have sleep deficit by the end of the week regardless. So yeah, I want to start off on the right foot. So yeah, I'm flying down on Saturday night, but quite late on Saturday night. So I'm only there. I'm really just staying in the hotel and flying out the next morning, but at least to get a decent night's sleep.
Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah, how about you? How's your run-up going?
It's going good. I mean, all my stuff for the conference next week is good. I've been working this week on trying to schedule a bunch of interviews with people for the podcast. We got a handful, maybe 7 to 10 different interviews that we've got lined up with different community people, just to get their thoughts on areas that they focus on and maybe some thoughts on the conference, some of the announcements as well. So we'll talk about that in a sec. Yeah, this week, it's been nice that it's been kind of low-key as far as Ignite goes. I'm doing a session, but I've done the session before, so doesn't take a whole lot for me to get ready for it.
Perfect.
Yeah, so it's a whole lot of that. But we do, actually, we'll talk a little bit here about what we're doing for Ignite next week. We talked about this before. We have one time that is set aside where we are recording at a specific time over the podcast area. It's, I think, at 3:40 on Wednesday. But there's not a whole lot of interactivity to it or a reason really to come see us. I mean, as much as I would love to have people come over and say, you know, come see us, we're recording, we're going to be essentially in a glass cage. And so you're not going to really be able to hear the show or anything like that. We just got a time that's kind of set aside. I don't know. It's an interesting setup because we don't have access to the big stage like we did in previous years.
Yeah.
They're just using it for other things. So, but we'll be scattered around. Scouted around the show and got a bunch of stuff that we'll be hopefully pushing out throughout the week. If we can get episodes mixed down and popped out, but we'll have a good coverage of the conference next week. Is there anything that you going to the conference? Is there anything that you're looking for, interested in, stuff you're trying to search out for the show? Anything specific this year?
Specific? Gosh, I really want to see where companies are investing in the ecosystem. That's my primary goal.
Okay.
I know that sounds kind of weird, but like in our show, we talked about tips for Ignite and spending time on the expo floor and all that. My goal is to go see where companies are investing effort in products around in the Microsoft ecosystem. See where people are spending effort and money and where there's interest and excitement and try to learn more about those.
Gotcha. Expo floor kind of, not session kind of stuff.
No, I have not even looked at the sessions.
I'm curious, there's some stuff that they're talking about this week that they've discussed. I'm curious to see what people's reaction is from it. So like, for example, in the SharePoint space, they have this concept called the Fluid framework, and it's kind of a co-authoring thing. I've got my thoughts on it.
Thoughts on that too.
It's a way for you, I may be oversimplifying it because I haven't seen it. I've seen a demo or two of it, but I wasn't at an event where they showed it earlier and I haven't seen how they're going to present it. So this may not be fair, but I'm just going to oversimplify it. If I only had like 10 seconds to explain to you what it is. For those of you web devs that are out there, it's basically SignalR or Socket.io that's hosted in SharePoint or hosted in Microsoft 365. They will store data for you and it allows you to do comms between multiple pages at the same time. So collaborative authoring, that kind of stuff. You can pass a document back and forth, or a document being like a JSON file back and forth. You don't have to go through the hassle, the plumbing of, you know, building up the whatever you're going to store or hosting the Socket.io service and that kind of stuff. To me, what I've seen so far, I don't know if it's being overhyped, but to me, it's like, yeah, okay.
To me, it feels like one of those things that, I think we're aligned on this, that Microsoft needed for their own applications to compete with Google Docs, to make co-authoring and Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, and so forth as snappy and as fast. They needed a new set of co-authoring plumbing to make it happen. And I don't actually know if they're using it for this, right? But this is what would make sense in my mind, is where it's come from, is that they built this co-authoring plumbing and now they're offering it to other developers to also use, except they didn't ask developers first if that's what they needed. Do you know what I mean?
Let me pile on.
Examples. There's some specific apps and use cases for this thing that I totally get, but I just think that's like the 0.01% of applications out there.
Yeah, and to pile on that.
About it. I don't know.
They built it and it's like, hey, this is cool. We're going to let other people use it as well. And now let's sit there and make a big deal about, hey, let's look at this cool thing. This is the future of collaborative work inside SharePoint. And I kind of just, I don't know, I looked and just said, I haven't seen anybody that they needed this. There's a lot of other things. My attitude is, if I had a dollar to spend, this is not where I would have invested the resources on things to focus on if it comes to SharePoint engineering development stuff that I would have liked to have seen certain teams work on.
Exactly. But that's what made me think they've already spent it.
Yeah.
They needed it for themselves, right? Which would make sense, right? To make it, I don't know, I think it makes sense to make a snappier, faster, more responsive, more, you know, device-friendly co-authoring environment across all of the Office applications. I would totally understand that. And now they've already spent the buck, and now they're like, yeah, okay, cool. You can use it too. Hope you find a use case for it. Yeah.
That's the big thing that I don't get, though, is because I've tried to find out, so where do you use this? What's the use case? And that's kind of the response that I'm getting back from people and them and asking, like, so we're curious to see what you guys would do with this. I'm like, no, what was the scenario? Because this is starting to sound a little bit like PowerOps and Flow, which is, hey, we're going to build this really cool thing here. We don't know how you're going to use it, but we're going to build this really cool thing that we think is really cool. And I'm like, it doesn't solve the problem that I have. I actually have a problem that I would have liked you guys to do. But anyway.
I don't want to be a naysayer, but I'd be surprised if anybody uses it outside of Microsoft. There might be a few, but I just don't think it's a widespread problem people are trying to solve.
Yeah.
There's old Statler and Waldorf in the rafters at the side of the Muppets.
Yeah.
Get it over here. I don't understand it. I'm old for this.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, we maybe totally missed the boat. So I'm curious to see how they present it, how they present this whole fluid framework. And I'm curious to see how it's received. And then I'm also curious to see what some of the, any like developer enhancements around Microsoft Teams. Yeah, I haven't seen a whole lot of stuff discussed yet on in some of the pre-release stuff. So there's some sessions I am going to try to get to go see and try and reach out to certain people. But there's some specific things around Teams I think are really confusing. Like, for example, you know, my understanding is this is not going to be clarified at Ignite, but you know, what we have seen publicly is that, and it's related to Office UI Fabric, Fabric React, and Teams stuff, is that we have this Fabric React control suite that we can use in our SharePoint framework and Office add-ins, and we can use it in a bunch of different places for reusable controls in the applications we build. However, you go build something in Teams, they had their own control suite they were using that looked totally different. Now, apparently that's been ditched, and they are now telling people to use a thing called Stardust, which is a more themable control suite. It's, okay, cool, makes sense. So we'll go ahead and use Stardust. And then you see Stardust, the repo has gone from where it was to being now under a Microsoft org-owned GitHub organization, and it's been renamed to Fluid UI. And one of the contributors on it is the Office UI Fabric team. And it's like, okay, so what the hell's going on here?
Yeah,
we've got two control suites that are going on here. They look different. They act different, but there's no kind of synergy. And one of them's called Fluid, which is kind of, or Fluent, which is what everything in Microsoft is going towards. But then you've got Fabric React. And when you ask the question, so like, yeah, we're still working on this stuff. And it's like, so when can we, and they've shared some other things too that I'm not going to repeat. It's customers, people who are close to it as well. We're all kind of like, I don't really understand this stuff. Like going, yeah, because the things that I just mentioned, all of that stuff is public. You can see all of that. You can see things you can see repos get moved and get renamed. And it's just kind of like, I'm confused on what we're supposed to be doing now. So what's up?
Yeah, that is confusing. And you know, Microsoft's a big place. Multiple things happen all at the same time. Then they argue about it for a while and try to shake it out. And then you end up with a confusing story at the end of the day.
Yeah, but
that was a good point though. Teams development, that would actually, you're right. Like, that would be one sort of technical area I am interested in, seeing how they go on, seeing what the new goodies are.
Yeah, so be curious to see. But hey, let's not make this show a four-hour show. Let's go ahead and move on, and let's go dive into some of the news here that we got. We got some recent news that's happened, and we want to talk about some of the announcements, and then free people up to go start checking out Ignite. So
sounds good.
Before we dive into the news, let's have a listen from a couple of our sponsors that make the show possible.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities and most recently, a new e-sign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to spend it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at Nintex.com.
Okay, CJ, we have one bit of news. This is some pretty epically big news that seemed to shock quite a few people last week.
Satya, I feel you, my son.
Microsoft landed a $10 billion contract with the Pentagon for cloud-based development, cloud-based cloud services. And yeah. I think the big thing that really shocked people is they beat Amazon.
Yes. Yes, they did. And it's quite controversial too. We don't want to get deeply political about this, right? But I suspect there is going to be some lawsuits about this.
How so?
Okay, so the conspiracy theory is that Trump tipped the scales on this. And it is a conspiracy theory. I'll give you that. There's no actual proof of any of this, right? But it's fairly well known that Trump and Bezos don't see eye to eye on things. You know, he's talked about getting USPS to up their postage for Amazon, right? To make more out of Amazon. They've had this public spat going for a while. And so the conspiracy theory is that there was some scales being tipped behind the scenes to make sure it didn't end up in Amazon's hands. Whether there's any validity to that or not is yet to be determined. But I suspect there'll be some lawsuits that, I mean, it's such an enormous contract. So much is on the line that I would probably say the same thing, even if that conspiracy theory wasn't floating around. Like favoritism and companies get, if they get even a whiff that there's an in to object to something of this size, they'll give it a shot. So, I mean, there was controversy about this contract earlier, right? Like it got postponed or something, I think, a while back because of objections. I think Oracle sued or somebody. I think it was Oracle. I can't remember now. To say it was unfair and that it was written for AWS and all of this. I think it was Oracle. Anyway, they got ruled out a while ago and it came down to Microsoft and Amazon. And Microsoft ultimately won it. But I just have a sense that it's not really the story.
Yeah, another big, I guess, news element to this as well is that there's a group at Microsoft in this whole world of employee or advocacy. There's this group at Microsoft called the Microsoft Workers for Good. They've protested their involvement in this contract. It's called the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure, or JEDI. JEDI. Sorry.
That's what I was doing down later to begin with.
I know. I was
coming full circle.
And the point of the contract is intended to bring the U.S. military technology into the modern era. And they quoted, and posting on Twitter, "We are disheartened that Microsoft accepted the JEDI contract. As Microsoft workers, we are now complicit in increasing the lethality of the U.S. Department of Defense." Well, you're free to go work somewhere else, as far the way I see it.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. The second point that I'd make on this is like, you already have been for decades. If you fundamentally disagree with that, you should probably leave. I mean, I get their point. Like, I can sympathize with their point of view. They don't want to be complicit in taking part in things like that. Like, you're totally entitled to feel that way, right?
Yeah.
And you're totally entitled to be part of it or not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's nothing holding you to work there. Microsoft is not, let me restate that. No company is required to do everything that their employees want them to do. You do things in the interest of the company, which, oh, by the way, shares jumped 3.5% on Monday when this came out. So that was a nice little spike. This employee advocacy thing where it's like going, you can't do this, you can't do that because we don't agree that this is the whole thing. It's like, you don't run the company. You go start your own company and then you get to make those kind of decisions.
Sure. I don't think I would want to work on a program that increased the lethality, the leth- what?
Yeah.
The lethalness, the potency of a military directly.
Yeah.
But if I work for Microsoft and I'm not working on those projects, I felt comfortable with that.
So
something direct, like that the military use Office 365, I suppose you could say I was complicit in that, but I didn't feel directly involved. But would I go work on a missile defense project? Probably not.
Okay, so we could go on to this for a while. Let me ask you this. So back in World War I and World War II, carpet bombing was a technique that everyone used. The big militaries all used as a way to defeat the enemy, which involved also bombing cities, and that was involving bombing civilians.
Yep.
But by increasing the technology of what they could do, they were able to do more surgical strikes and make things more. And you don't see the same numbers of people in certain wars. Like, you don't see them carpet bombing an entire city like they used to. I don't want to get into the weeds here and say, oh no, this happened in Afghanistan or this happened in Iraq. Like, I'm broad brush, things are different than where they were 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Absolutely.
So where do you draw, where do you draw the line? What are you okay with? And not you, but I'm talking more to this group, is what are you okay with? What are you not okay with? And fine, Microsoft doesn't want to do it, but they're going to hire somebody out to do it. And would you like to not at least be involved in what they're doing to have to do things like the right way?
Sure. Make it as good as it could be, right? Or as, maybe not as good. Good could be interpreted the wrong way there. But, as responsible as it could be, or as, what have you.
And that's what I mean when I say being involved in it. I don't mean like, don't you want to get a piece of the action? It's, don't you want to have your feelings like that be able to influence or voiced and saying like, what is the right thing and the wrong thing to do here?
I mean, my point is that Microsoft's been embroiled in this stuff for decades and decades, and I don't think this changes anything really in that respect. It's just another step in, or a notch in that journey.
Agreed.
So anyway, the Jedi contract, $10 billion, maybe some lawsuits. We will see. I have no idea if that's going to happen or not, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Okay. So that was just one big bit of news we wanted to go through here. We got a couple things here related to Ignite news that's coming out here. Would you want to tackle one of these things we have here first? We're going to go through this kind of quick. We're not going to go into in-depth look at all of this stuff. The idea is to give you an idea of what's being discussed. We'd love to put a ton of links into our show notes here for everybody to go follow up on this. You can always get the show notes. Go to microsoftcloudshow.com/... new feature I forgot to tell you about, CJ. microsoftcloudshow.com/327. We'll take you straight to this episode.
Ooh.
Yeah. All episodes above 300 have, if you just put the number, microsoftcloudshow.com/the episode number, it'll redirect you to the real page.
Sweet. That's pretty good.
Yeah. So would you like to grab one of these? I'm sorry.
yeah, sure. So I guess we'll start with some of the big ones, right? And then we'll pick through a bunch of other things as we go. But for me, the most interesting one that completely I did not see this coming was Azure Arc, which is titled Extended Azure Management and Security to Any Infrastructure. So I think the idea with this, we're coming at this totally new, right? So honestly, don't know all about this. But what they say here is that you'll be able to use Azure Arc to basically be able to use Azure services anywhere, and extends Azure management to any infrastructure for unified management, governance, and control across clouds, data centers, and edge. They look and feel just like Azure resources, and they provide unified auditing, compliance, and role-based access across multiple environments at scale. So does this mean you could hook up a whole bunch of machines in your data center to Azure Arc and then manage them using familiar Azure management tools? That's what it sounds like.
It sounds like that, yeah.
Yeah. So they're using it. It's talking about modernizing any infrastructure using basically cloud management tools and best practices and that sort of thing.
It's interesting.
So you'll be able to have an Azure, I imagine, you'll be able to have an Azure portal with resources that actually live in AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud, and maybe some on-prem stuff.
I thought that we already had some of the way to manage your own VMs in AWS inside of Azure, like with the Azure, was it not Monitor? Was it Monitor?
Oh gosh, I don't know.
I thought I remember seeing that in the dashboard, being able to manage your VMs both like on-prem, Azure, AWS.
Oh, right.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fascinating. So Microsoft are trying to get into this is the classic surround and destroy tactic, right? they want to make tools to help you manage all your stuff in more places. And you're like, sweet, that's all goodness. And then they'll make it better to have those resources in Azure.
Interesting.
I suspect the sweet story will always be with Azure. Anyway,
yeah.
What do you got for us?
I got something here called Synapse Analytics. This is what they're calling this, a limitless analytics service that brings together traditional data warehousing and big data analytics. It's going to give enterprises the freedom to query data on their terms using either serverless, on-demand, or provisioned resources at scale. So simply put, it's the Azure SQL data warehouse that's been evolved, allowing you to bring these two worlds together with a unified experience to ingest, prepare, manage, and serve data for immediate BI and machine learning applications. It's a new service, and it looks like it's a new way to do more data analytics on big data on using some of the existing Microsoft services.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's a bit over my head, but it's one of the big things that they're going to highlight
I imagine we'll see demos in the keynote for that.
Yeah. How about you?
Hey, in typical Microsoft fashion, they're renaming stuff. Microsoft Flow is now being called Power Automate. It's part of the Power Platform. So Power. So yeah, they're renaming it, but they're also adding a new set of capabilities around robotic process automation, or RPA, which is a fancy term for UI automation in the testing world, which lets you click buttons and fill in information in apps that might not have an API, for example, and sort of run a workflow to move stuff around, for example. So if you do a repetitive task, like, I don't know, entering information into a system that doesn't have an API, you could use an RPA tool, like the one from Nintex, one of our great sponsors. Or UiPath, or, you know, there's a few of them out there. And now Power Automate has one, and they're calling UI Flows. So even though Flow has been renamed to Power Automate, Power Automate now has UI Flows. Got that?
So I am looking forward to sitting down. I've got one or two interviews lined up with some people next week. I'm looking forward specifically to talk about their thoughts on what's going on with Power Platform. I am so confused by that platform, by the constant change that it's under. And I don't mean like change, like new stuff coming out, just licensing changes and naming changes and capability changes. And it's hard to really stay on top of what's going on. I mean, our friends over at the Bifocal podcast, they have a whole podcast that they frequently focus on, have episodes that's just, here's what's new in Power BI, or here's what's changed in Power BI. It's like, I can't keep up on this stuff. I mean, it's almost the point where I've almost given up on trying to follow what's going on with it, because it changes so frequently. And like, we've heard like big licensing changes that were happening with Power Apps and Flow, where they're now making it to where, and I don't know if they rolled this back or changed it, but there was a whole licensing change where they were making it like self-service licensing. So you didn't have to have your IT organization go buy the licenses. Like if you worked for a big organization, you could go fork over the credit card and buy a license that would work for you using your corporate credit card to buy Power BI and for your own user. And it's like, no governance or management.
IT couldn't turn it off.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So So even if you didn't want your users to be able to use Power BI for some reason, you couldn't stop them. Curious.
Or if you have like an enterprise deal that you decide to use, what is it, Tableau? And someone's like, no, we want to use Power BI instead. It's like, no, we just spent all this money on this. Don't use that. Use this other resource we have. Like, no, we want to use something else. And it's like, I know Microsoft is good for Microsoft, but I mean, it was... When this news came out, someone posted a user voice, no, please don't do this. Please give us a way to block it. And within like 2 or 3 days, it had over 5,000 votes on user voice.
Yeah.
And still climbing.
You don't want to be pissing off the IT admins.
Oh my God. Let me see if I can find where that user voice is. Let's see what that's up to now.
That is like,
oh, it's up to 6,700. In 7 days, it's up to 6,700 votes.
Wow.
294 comments.
Brutal.
I'll post this in the show notes. This is great.
Yeah, go vote for it if you want control over whether features get rolled out or not in your organization. I would say most do.
Nuts.
Cool.
Okay, so that's some big Ignite news. We want to dive into some specific news around SharePoint, OneDrive, Teams, Microsoft 365. Oh, there's a cool little nugget that Microsoft Edge, otherwise known as
Credge,
is going GA. The Chromium version of Edge is going GA in January. GA in January of 2020. So there we go. But
nice.
We do have some stuff that we want to talk about related to some Microsoft 365 stuff that we're going to announce, or no, we're not going to announce that Microsoft is announcing at Ignite. So before we do that, let's hear from one of our great sponsors and we will be right back.
For those of us familiar with ShareGate, we know that they've always been about SharePoint and Office 365 migration. But now that we've all moved to the cloud, like me, you're probably thinking, how about how to scale your Office 365 to a full self-serve environment without worrying about thousands of groups and teams popping up out of nowhere, aka sprawl. That's why the folks at ShareGate developed ShareGate Apricot. It's a solution that helps us automate our Office 365 groups governance by allowing us to collaborate with users to keep everyone accountable for the things they create. Their super simple to use in-app experience lets us lighten our load by delegating group management responsibilities to users we trust, aka no more sprawl. Want to get your hands on ShareGate Apricot? Try it for free for 30 days at sharegate.com/collegeshow.
All right, CJ, the SharePoint team has got some big goodies that they want to share.
Yeah. Hey, one thing I thought of just as we were talking about sponsors.
Mm.
If you're at Ignite and you're listening to this, go visit them.
Oh, yes.
At Point in their booth. Go visit Raygun. Go visit Nintex. Go visit ShareGate. Go tell them that you listen to our show and that you appreciate them supporting the show. We would really appreciate you doing it.
Yes, please do that. It helps them, and we're not doing that. Well, okay, we are kind of doing that. We would like for them to continue to sponsor the show. It helps us put the show on and helps us do... Oh, we'll have t-shirts next week too. I have to go pick those up. Those are sitting at the mailbox. But it does help us, you know, support the show and put the show on. But it also helps them because it helps them... It's hard to identify what the value comes from sponsoring a podcast. And people going up to them and saying, we hear about you guys. We hear about you guys through the Microsoft Cloud Show, through the sponsorship you have on the podcast. So thanks a lot for supporting that show. It helps them know that what they're doing, it does help and it does work. If you don't get that kind of feedback, they really don't know that. It's not like, you know, running ads on a website or something like that, where you can check the clicks and stuff. You can't do that with a podcast. So
yeah,
as much as we would like to be able to track what you're doing when you listen to the show, we can't do that. No, I'm just kidding. We don't really want to do that. Actually, I do, but we won't go there. So let's just go on with the show.
You are wearing a t-shirt.
All right.
That has the Empire on it.
It does. Well, yeah, it's the Empire. And it says, have you seen this one? This is awesome. So you'll like this. It says, Urban Regeneration Program, promoting new communities and creating jobs.
That building the Death Star. Nice.
Classic. Okay, so let's talk a little bit here first about OneDrive. So they got a bunch of, first of all, there's a big push on stuff with Yammer, on new changes with Yammer, a whole new Yammer UI, new Yammer Mobile, there's Yammer in Teams, there's Yammer Conversations in Outlooks, there's e-discovery stuff, there's a whole bunch of things going on with SharePoint. I'm not very much a Yammer guy. I saw the stuff that they were showing. They're very big on the new look, and I think the drinking game is the word beautiful. So they're really big on it. So if you're a Yammer person, there's a lot of big focus going on with it. I don't want to diminish it. It's just, if you couldn't tell from listening to the show, I'm not a Yammer user. And so I don't really know how to kind of express some of this stuff.
I have a fun activity for us, AC.
Uh-oh.
During the keynote, day one keynote, we should count how many times the word Yammer is said. And we should count the number of times the word Teams is said. And then we should compare and contrast. And let's see what happens.
That would be interesting. We can do that. We're not going to be drinking during that keynote though, right?
I mean, maybe.
No, that's too early for me. I mean, 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, really 6 a.m. for you.
Yeah. I definitely want Yammer in that case. Because I suspect I'm going to be stone cold sober walking out of the keynote.
Oh my goodness. All right, why don't we talk about OneDrive?
I just bag on Yammer. I know I do. I'm sure there are fans out there, but I just don't get it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, that's SharePoint and OneDrive.
So OneDrive, one of the big things that they want to, that they're going to focus on is they're delivering on a lot of stuff that they talked about previously. So like, for example, in the past, like the SharePoint conference, they made a big deal about a differential sync. So if you have a document that or an image that is 100 meg image and you go to upload it, it syncs up with OneDrive, and then you open it up and you make one little change to it, like adding an overlay or something like that, you don't want to have to resync another 100 gigs. So it's actually, they've got technology that they were building and is now going to be rolling out that allows you to do the differential sync. And so only the bits that need to change are going to be synced with you or synced with OneDrive. They've also got a lot of changes they made around SharePoint lists. SharePoint lists, there's a way to kind of view them in a full screen mode where the quick launch on the left-hand side goes away. The navigation at the top of the header kind of goes away. So you have a better kind of full screen view of this. A lot of improvements to row formatting, column formatting with a lot of the JSON stuff that they've done. And then they've also made it easier within a SharePoint site to teamify a SharePoint site. So using the navigation in the top left corner, you can say, I want to create a SharePoint team out of this, and certain pieces of the site will automatically get provisioned as tabs inside of the team.
Gotcha.
So
right,
a lot of big requests there. They've got a roadmap.
We have a SharePoint site that you want to teamify.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So, and there's a lot of stuff that is coming out too. They have a whole new files experience that's coming out in Teams, new file sharing experience, save for later, expiring access for external users, at mentions and email notifications and office comments, recommended new stuff. There's a lot of things that are coming out soon, like migration with Mover. So Mover, we talked about that acquisition just recently. That is mostly going to be used for migrating people from places like Box or Google Drive or whatever, and or Dropbox into Microsoft, into OneDrive and SharePoint. Yep. Sync reporting, 100 gigabyte file upload size, that's rolling out now. So I think it was 20 gigs or 2 gigs before, now, or 15 gigs before. And now it's max file size. Yeah, and they're rolling that out. They're bumping that up to 100. Now, on the SharePoint,
CAD files or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
Really big movies?
Maybe.
Yeah.
They do have a bunch of stuff too. Now, around SharePoint, they do have one big thing they have been working on. This has been a big push for a while that they're going to announce, or that they're announcing at Ignite this week. And it's called the Knowledge Network. And it's reimagining content management. So the idea here is that, you know, Microsoft has been in the content management business. They kind of re-energized it 5 years ago. So, I don't know, a while ago.
Yeah.
They basically took content management, instead of you having to go to like document management sites or records management sites, they democratized it and they took all these features and they kind of put them throughout all of SharePoint. A lot of things have changed, right? So they've now got, it's document management, or ECM is a lot more than just text. It's also video, it's also images, it's also audio. And so they've done a lot of stuff around this new thing called the Knowledge Network that's being launched in a private preview towards the end of this year. There's some cool things that they showed with this. They have these concepts of like using this new thing called the AI Builder, which is part of the Power Platform, where you can essentially, you can visually build a model. So if I have a bunch of files and I upload them to the AI Builder, I can then call out specific data elements in those files and train a model so that when new content gets updated, it understands what that content is and knows how to extrapolate those things. Has a whole concept of topics where it can identify a topic and content. It automatically hyperlinks it, creates what's called a topic card. So it can find other sites, other content that's related to that topic, people that are involved with it as well. And then when you can go into the card, and it actually has a whole like topic page that has a whole bunch of additional information about that. So a topic could be like, say, Project X or a new project that you're working on or something like that. That could be a new feature. And a lot of it is done using the artificial intelligence stuff from Azure to determine what these things are for you and automatically classify things.
Yeah. Like, it looks really impressive, actually, like what they've done. And I think there's this overarching theme that companies want to know. They want to know what they know. Right. And they've got all this content and they don't know what it's about and what it relates to and all this. And there's literally so much being created and so much that they already have, but they can't manually figure all that out. Right. And so Microsoft building these tools using AI and so forth to help extract various topics and build a taxonomy of what knowledge is in their organization is pretty interesting. I've seen it in action. in a private preview, and it's pretty sweet. Now, that the interesting thing, I'm interested in what people's reactions to this will be, because to me, it feels like the next logical step in the evolution of Delve. And Delve freaked people out, some people out, because it started exposing content that wasn't secured properly and people could find stuff they weren't supposed to, right? And so I suspect there'll be some similar reactions to the way Delve was received, with some that a lot of the stuff is going on sort of automagically, and it's finding content relating to projects and, you know, what have, you know, IT doesn't have all their ducks in a row with security. We all know that. And so will it promote more of this sort of stuff that shouldn't be seen by certain people? And it's no excuse. A company should fix their security model. Like, I get that, but it won't stop people from wanting to turn it off, you know, and they wanted to turn Delve off in a big way in a lot of cases because of that. And so it'll be interesting to see the reaction to this, but it is really impressive. It's they've done a really nice job of it. And it, like I said, it's V1 and it's only in private preview for now, so I'm sure it'll evolve pretty rapidly.
Speaking about that too, yeah. So what they've talked about is that it's what they're doing at Ignite is they're announcing Knowledge Network. It's announcing it as a private preview, and their timing for GA is supposed to be in the first half of 2020. So if you know how Microsoft does these things, I wouldn't be surprised if that's like the Inspire conference, which is usually what, June, July-ish?
Yeah.
It's the big partner conference. I wouldn't be surprised if we see it there. There's also another big piece about it called the Workplace Analytics. It's like a self-service dashboard for productivity insights and industry benchmarks. There's a lot of improvements around search and Bing and Microsoft Stream that all kind of ties into this. So this may help too. Like, what is their pitch, or what are you going to hear them say at Ignite? Knowledge Network is going to empower people with knowledge and expertise in the apps that you use every day, using AI to automatically organize content across teams and systems and to manage and protect content with built-in security and workflow. So that's the big narrative. That's the one thing that they're really trying to push across here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge move. Looks like it's taken a lot of effort. So I'm sure it'll be a big topic.
That's the big thing to me. That I'm glad you said it like that, because that's a big takeaway that I had. When I first saw this, I was like, this thing looks huge. Before anybody asks about it, the licensing stuff like that, it's a bit early to say. It looks like it's going to be a potential add-on and maybe included as an E5 license, but it's Microsoft licensing. Things change all the time.
Who really knows? I suspect there will be some serious dodging and weaving around that question at this Ignite.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, this is going to cost Microsoft quite a lot to run. So they're not going to give it to you for free, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that's some of the SharePoint stuff. There's also a bunch of news around Teams that's coming out. Now, there's a lot of stuff related to Teams if you're in the whole telephony, whatever. If you're in the phone thing. I screw up with that word.
Philophony.
If you like to use a telephone to call people through Teams, there's a lot of stuff here, like, you know, enhanced 911 and all that. I'm not even going to touch that stuff because I don't understand it. I just know that, look, there's a big pile of news over there for you.
Yeah. I just want to make a call.
Yeah, exactly. So let me give you a couple hot button things that they announced that are things that people have been asking about. First, let's go with the stuff that maybe isn't as hot button. Native task experience. You've got your tasks in Outlook. You got your tasks exposed from Outlook using the To-Do app. You're going to have a native experience right inside of Teams. And that includes both your personal tasks and your impersonal tasks that you share that you share with other people.
Work tasks and personal tasks.
Yeah, there you go.
So is it a tasks app? Are we getting to do in Teams?
Yes, that's what it looks like to me. The data, we're not getting another silo of tasks. We're getting another way to interact with our tasks.
Good.
Okay.
Because then I'm gonna rage quit this podcast and throw my laptop out the window.
No, that's not what we're getting. There's like a blessed app catalog as well that is going to be more like letting administrators have more control over organization blessed apps. Now for some of the stuff that I think is going to be, I don't want to say they're little things. They're just bullet points, but they make a big impact.
Yeah.
Pop out windows. So if you're in a team, meeting, you're in a meeting, you're going to be able to still, you know, be in that meeting and still see the video going on, but be able to still work inside of Teams.
Yes.
Click a gun, yes, pop it out in a separate window.
Okay, so at home I have like this 38.5-inch widescreen, ultra-wide monitor, right?
Yeah.
And I'm in a meeting and I've got a document and the thing side by side. And what I really want to do is pop my meeting out of my Teams thingy so that I can have a chat going on without the video being the size of a small postage stamp on my 38-inch monitor.
You can do that now.
Yeah.
Or soon. You can do that not only with meetings, you can also do it with group chats. You also have another thing related to meetings is that there will be, I know, wait for this, a presenter in attendee mode. You can actually have people flagged as presenters and attendees so the attendees can not just all of a sudden when you're in the middle of a meeting, hijack the meeting and start sharing their desktop.
Yeah, that would be nice. Also, I'd like to stop attendees drawing dick pics on my slides while I'm presenting. Will that help?
Is it possible? I don't think that's a line item in the feature list, but I do believe you can block that.
You know how you can just start drawing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another cool meeting thing is live captions. It'll be previewed, just the public preview will be just English. They'll look at other languages as well, but it's kind of cool because you can turn on the video that I saw as, you know, I can mute the meeting and then have live captions so I can still see what's going on in the meeting and I can see the interactions, but I can just see the text going.
Nice.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's pretty useful.
And one that people have been begging for quite a while, which is going to be interesting to see how this is received in terms of how it's implemented. It seems to me there's been some questions about this. Private channels. And the idea here is that when you create a private channel, you will get a separate site collection just for that channel.
Yeah, because of the security model behind the scenes.
In SharePoint, yeah.
In SharePoint.
And there has been... In the discussions I've seen around this, there have been some very passionate conversations about it. It definitely does not look like it was taken lightly, that there was a lot of thought that's been put into this, but I'm not so sure from Microsoft, but I'm not so sure that some of the people in the community share the same mindset on certain decisions. I'm not saying that one is right and one is wrong. I just think it's going to be interesting to watch grab your popcorn, sit back and watch the discussion. It'll be interesting.
The discussion has been going on for a really, really long time internal at Microsoft. I know that for sure. I'm talking about how to do this. And it's been, you know, it's a big thing versus Slack, for example. So they're getting to it, but their implementation may be a little controversial.
Yes. Yeah. So there's all that. There was a bunch of other stuff that I saw that they're announcing. And then like they got some industry specific stuff. So like, you know how they have the frontline workers things?
Yeah.
There's going to be a way for people to sign into Teams with just a phone and like a phone number and not have, if they don't have an email. So like they say like frontline workers are, every time they hear say frontline.
Remember the Kaizala app?
So that is a capability of Kaizala. And there's another, and they're also bringing a polls messaging extension, a surveys messaging extension, and a collaboration on a checklist messaging extension. All of those are primarily driven from the same things you could do in Kaizala.
Aha, we're trying to Teamsify Kaizala and get rid of it. Nice.
Yes. There's a way that you can publish Power Apps as a team app, and you can also pin Power Apps inside of Teams.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for like requisition forms or... forms or whatever it happens to be. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Cool. There's a bunch of additional stuff that's out there too that I'm skipping over, but yeah.
Shall we move on to some last minute bits and pieces?
Yes.
M365?
Yeah, what you got for us?
Let's move on to picks. So apparently there's this new voice thingy coming in Outlook for Play My Mails. AC, you've got mail. Cortana, read it to me. Hi, AC, CJ.
Speak to me, Cortana.
That's right. So yeah, this would be kind of cool. Like honestly, I drive to work in the mornings and I don't want to use my phone, obviously. And I would really like to be able to hit a button in Outlook and have it read my mail to me.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be kind of cool. I could see that.
Be
useful.
It'd be interesting to see how that works, how people like highlight something. So referring to this and they highlight something down in your response, like, what is this? So referring to this, highlighted from other mail. Now, going, what the hell is he talking about?
Dude, based on my voice transcriptions that you get in iOS when people leave voicemail, this thing's going to be a disaster.
Yes.
Voice enhancements in Stream video, you know, I think. Obviously, when you record meetings and so forth in Teams, it goes into Stream. It's all integrated with Stream now. being able to do voice enhancements and that. I think what they mean by that is like hearing people better and things. And also a Teams chat button in Outlook, i.e. stop emailing back and forth about this. Let's just quickly knock out a conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's one thing about Yammer that I did see that I did like. And then Yammer announcements. I find it a little ironic. I thought Yammer was going to kill email. But when you get a notification, an email notification about a conversation that you're involved or that someone like linked to you on or at mentioned you on in Yammer, you will be able to interact with that conversation, leaving reactions and reply straight from the email inside of Outlook without even having to go to the Yammer app.
That's useful because every time I click on one of those links and one of those emails, it never works.
Well, and
like I click on it and then I'll have to sign in. I'm like, which network is this in and where did it come?
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's a disaster.
Teams does the same thing to me. It's like, oh yeah, you've been mentioned. Like, great, click on it, go sign in. I'm like,
You know what? Okay, so here's...
I don't work for Microsoft where everyone's there.
Here's notification fatigue. I get dings and dongs and bings and bongs on my computer and I cannot for the life of me figure out where the hell it's come from. It's either Yammer or Teams or Slack or Outlook or, you know, there's all these places they come from. And unless you see them, you can't figure out where they're from. And so then you go, like I'm on OS 10 or whatever, OS X. And so you open up the notifications tab and then you look through and the little buggers are not in the notifications tab. And so I still can't find them there either. Get off my lawn.
You know what I need? Hey, Siri, what the hell is that?
Yeah, I agree, man. I had this yesterday. I've got this fear of missing a toast notification because I just like the life of the chances of me ever figuring out what it was is 4/5 of FA.
I felt like my dad too. I was just like, he struggles with technology. And like my phone was sitting in the kitchen the other day and I'm sitting there with helping my daughter with her homework and I got some notification. My wife was like, what the hell is that? I'm like, I have no idea. I can't figure out where that came from. Grab my phone. See if it's showing on my screen. And she had to grab the screen. It's like, you need to sign in. So I go look at it. She shows me her phone. It unlocks it. I go in and try and show, what was that notification? And it's gone. I'm like, I have no idea what that was for.
Yep. Oh, God. Yeah, it's just notification hell.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't remember how we got onto that. Anyway,
yeah.
Shall we move on?
Yeah. Let's do some picks.
Sounds good.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
You know what? I'm going to pick first because mine is a very fast pick. How's that?
Okay. Yeah. Sure.
I'm going to be completely honest. I didn't have a pick when we started the show today and I struggled while we were putting the show notes together trying to find a pick. And I was like, you know what? Okay, fine. I have something that maybe it interests people. It has absolutely nothing to do with the podcast, but one of my hobbies is raising fish. So I raise a certain kind of a fish called an African cichlid, which is, it's got the same colors as like saltwater fish, but it's not saltwater. It's freshwater. They're much easier to keep. They're much cheaper, much more durable. And it's a lot easier to maintain a tank when you travel if it's not a saltwater tank, because those things can be really temperamental. So I found this video of there's fish farms all over the place. We've got a bunch of them in Florida, and there's one down in South Florida called Florida Exotic Fish or Exotic Fish Farm, whatever. And there's a video of a guy that went down to this fish farm. And you can see how they go through and how they raise fish and how all the stuff is done. It's really interesting to see how, like in the past, they used to put, the fish farms used to be all like sunk into the ground with these big like tanks on the ground outside. They don't do that anymore because there's a poisonous frog that can destroy an entire tank. So now they make these things. They got the idea. They bought a bunch of caskets like for dead people.
Yeah.
And they made a mold. And now whenever they need new tanks, they go through and they pour a bunch of caskets. And yeah, the fish are all like raised in these concrete caskets and stuff. So,
wow, that's fascinating. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I knew nothing about that. I'm definitely going to watch that video.
I'm in the midst of redoing my tank. I've got I have a 125 gallon tank in my office. It's a glass tank. I'm swapping it out probably for an acrylic tank. I'm using canister filters. I'm switching it out for a sump. And I've got I could put like 30 to 40 fish in the tank. I've got 5 in there right now because I know I'm having to do this move and I don't want to have to go scooping out a bunch of fish.
Sure.
And it takes time to set up a new tank. And so I'm really looking forward to getting this done so I can go through and restock. But yeah, there you go. A little bit of behind the scenes on what I like to do outside of tech.
Nice. Hey, I've got one. The mini shuttle from the Air Force, which is called the X-37B, which is an unmanned autonomous, I don't know if it's autonomous, that's probably not right, drone-like space shuttle, breaks a record and lands after 780 days in orbit. So this thing, the interesting part about this, right, is this one went up on a SpaceX rocket, right? So SpaceX launched it in all sort of shrouds of secrecy and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Air Force fly this thing around in space and nobody really knows what it's doing. Not nobody. I'm sure somebody does. The vast majority of the world doesn't know what it's doing. It's got a payload bay like the shuttle. It actually sort of looks a bit like the shuttle. It's very similarly modeled, I guess you want to say. It's got a payload bay that looks real similar to the shuttles. Nobody really knows what it carries. You know, I'm just going to throw it out there. It's probably spying on people and stuff.
I think it's spying on other satellites.
It's possible, yeah. It is possible, yeah. And the cool thing about this thing is it's got some engines on it and it can change its orbit within parameters, right? If you know anything about orbital physics, it's quite hard to change your orbit. It takes a lot of energy and so you can only do it within reason, but it can basically maneuver around in space and do different things. So your theory is it's visiting other nations' satellites and like tapping them and stuff?
It's not my theory. I've read this from other things from people who follow this thing. And when they've tried to track it, they've noticed that it gets close to the same orbit and the same inclination as some other suspected spy satellites from other countries like China and Russia and stuff. And so the idea is that this thing is trying to not like literally going up to the satellite, connecting to it, tapping into it and stuff, but trying to intercept communications. And they believe it's a spy. This is a spy vehicle. This landing was interesting because what was it? Sunday? Yeah, it was Sunday, October the 27th. So what was that? That was Sunday morning. Yeah. We all woke up at around 3 a.m. or around 4 a.m. on Sunday morning because the sonic boom was right over us.
Like, right.
Wow. Yeah. So a lot of us woke up and it was like, what the hell was that? And then on Facebook, it's like, this thing just landed. But it was a big boom at around 4 o'clock in the morning.
So yeah, it's been cruising up there. This is the longest stay it's been up, 780 days.
That's cool.
It's pretty amazing that it can do that. I'm sure we'll learn more about this one day. All we get to know right now is when it goes up and when it comes down. And then astronomers try to track it and stuff like that, but we don't know much about it.
It was designed to go up for 270 days. It has now been up for 2 missions, one of 780 days and one of 718 days.
Gotcha.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Apparently there's a bigger version of it that's been designed that's automated but is human capable.
This one's what, the size of a city bus, right?
It looks a bit smaller than that, I think.
Yeah, you're right. It does.
It's sort of like a mini bus.
Yeah. Short bus.
A short bus. Yeah. One of those real stumpy ones that look funny.
Due to go back up again next year.
Yeah. Oh, right. Nice.
Cool.
Cool. They say, well, I will see you in Florida today.
Yeah.
when this podcast comes out, we will be in person at the show. So, it's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's been great to see you again as well. And if you guys are at the show and you happen to listen to this episode, we will be wandering around the floor and we'd love to catch up. Come find us. We'll have a couple shirts. Not going to have all of them. We're not going to do a big t-shirt giveaway at a specific time, but we'll each have a stash that we'll be handing out at times.
Perfect.
I'll take some to my session on Thursday. There we go.
Yeah, good call.
Get some attendees that way.
Nice.
Cool.
Listen to it for now. Wow. All right. Have a good one, I say.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.